Good morning. Today is Labor Day, September the 7th. Joining us this morning is Eureka Chief of Police, Mr. Steve Watson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian and listeners.
So have you made a new friend in Fortuna yet?
Like a new police chief friend?
Yeah.
I've actually met Chief Day
a couple of times,
and I haven't seen him in a couple of weeks. But he's a great guy. Seems like he'll be a good fit.
Now, he tells me he walks to work.
Well, good for him. it would take me more than a few minutes to do that.
Yeah, I figured it might, but it's something you'd strive for. How's that?
I see how it is already. You're starting to create some friendly competition here.
Yeah, there we go. All righty, are you ready for, or why do we say that? This is your Walt Disney in the 60s. Okay, that might predate you just a tad.
A decade or so, yes.
Okay. There was a movie called Happiest Millionaire that I think is, for me, the best non-animated Disney movie of all time.
The bold statement, Brian.
It's about 2.5 hours long. It had Fred McMurray.
Okay. Fred, yes.
It was one of the first John Davidson ones. Leslie Ann Warren was in it. I mean, they had Sid Charisse was in there. They had a song. It's a great bar fight song. You would love it. Professionally speaking, of course. Anyway, but this phrase is in that song, Shilly Shally. What is the reason we say a person who can't make up his mind is silly shallying?
I'm sure you're about to tell us.
Uh-huh. Okay. And with that lead in, the person who can't make up his mind consistently asks himself questions, and the term is a corruption of shall I? Shill being a weak form of shall. So, no questioning. Just do.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be one of the ones.
No dilly dally. Let's have a drink of it now.
I'm not sure that that's one of the ones I'm going to file away in my limited memory.
Probably not. But if you're a fan of Disney or Happiest Millionaire, maybe you'll get a chance to see that. I don't even know if it's on Netflix anymore or any of those. It's or Disney Channel.
Well, yeah, I'm curious now.
Oh, so 3-day weekends. Exciting, good, normal. How do cops look at 3-day weekends?
Well, it depends on the
whether you're working
on your working or not, and what happens over the course of the weekend, and which 3-day weekend that it is. Labor Day, that's usually a nice one.
Do you change any of the rotation schedules or anything along those lines, or is it just it's a 3 days and they happen to be the 3 days?
That's not one that we typically have to staff any kind of special way around. Obviously, there's going to be officers and dispatchers working 24/7, so they won't have that holiday, but it comes with the job.
Oh, boy, is that sympathetic. It just oozes out through the microphone. And being the chief?
I think I'm going to actually attempt to take the 3-day weekend. I know one of those days is occupied already, though.
Prerogative, huh?
Well, it's nice to reach that point in your career when sometimes you get to make those decisions for yourself.
Again, the sympathy is just overwhelming. what's summer been like for you guys? Okay, normal. I know the tourists are starting to come around, but boy, you drive Old Town, and it doesn't feel like summer at all, just because there's so many businesses that aren't, or they're not to the same extent that they had been open, or just empty storefronts.
Well, now that we're, at least for now, past that month, the 6 weeks of demonstrations that we have, summer's been okay. It definitely feels a little surreal still. I mean, this entire year, we're ready to get off the crazy train already, but we're not done yet.
Yeah,
I'm not. We have election season coming up.
I'm not sure if that baby has even left the station yet. I think we may still be loading on and getting ready to go out. I just, all the weirdness that's out there, and I don't know if you or others are starting to buy into it, but some of these conspiracies are starting to almost kind of make sense, which is a little disconcerting also, but you keep seeing little indicators that, hey, they're right. Look at, hey, that one's coming. kind of weirdness going on in that regard.
Well, we've got enough truth happening in our day-to-day work that I don't have a whole lot of time to delve into the conspiracy theories.
Are you seeing much or any of the, what do we call it, civil injustice here? You know, with the protests. I don't think that we're having any physical, you know, things being broken or put to fire or anything along those lines. But does any of the intelligence indicate that there's concerns for the future that some of that might visit Humboldt County or Eureka specifically?
Well, I mean, there's always
not the protest gathering, blah blah blah, but I mean the physicalness of it all.
You know, there's always concerns that can happen. You know, you have copycat situations. Seems to often be a smaller group of agitators that have their own agenda. We did see that in a couple of protests at the end of May, beginning of June, where they certainly didn't represent the entire crowd that was there, but there were those among them that, again, clearly had an agenda, hoped to hijack the event for their own purposes, did in fact commit some acts of vandalism, broken windows, broken patrol car windows, some rocks thrown at officers, some damage to buildings. It was overall relatively minor. And, you know,
are they held financially responsible for that?
If we catch them, yes. We did make one arrest of an individual we caught vandalizing a business. That case is still working its way through. What I keep trying to reiterate to our officers is, hey, this is the First Amendment. This is what makes America, America. And while we may not always agree on each of the issues and stuff, you know, there are times where people will need and want to be able to gather peaceably and assemble and be heard. And, you know, and sometimes maybe we're going to give them the street to do that if that's what they feel that they need to do. You know, because you're weighing that disruption against the larger issues. Where we draw the red line is significant acts of violence and vandalism.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this Labor Day with Mr. Steve Watson. No, so since you're taking the day off, you're not chief anymore. You're just Mr. Steve Watson.
Mr. Every Day.
Yeah, you're not quite as special today as you thought.
Being chief's not my entire identity.
Yes, good move. Summertime. Is one element that we mentioned, you know, just kind of general trends. What about the criminal activities? Early on, you'd said that there was a spike of domestic violence or abuse. I guess they're interchangeable for most of us. Crimes of opportunity. Okay. Because things were different. Is that continued or is that kind of settled a little bit?
Well, you know, that's a great question and one we get asked fairly frequently.
Never mind.
Well, we don't always answer. We have that data now.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, the first 40 days post shelter in place order, we saw some very concerning trends where, for instance, our domestic violence-related calls increased about 50%, including arrests and reports that we're taking. And thankfully, that trend has not continued. We just looked at...
Has it held? Or is it
no,
back
it's,
down?
It's went back to normal, pretty much. We do seem to see more mental health-related calls. I don't have the numbers, but that's what my officers are telling me. Like stress levels are higher and
okay.
Services have been impacted. But we looked at March 20th through August 20th, that five-month period, starting with the beginning of the state and local shelter-in-place orders, looked at our crime data, crime and COVID in Eureka during that period. And it was pretty interesting what we found. We saw the domestic violence issue kind of even out where there was no real noticeable increase or decrease in that crime. But if we looked at our overall calls for service, they actually increased about 1%, which is pretty minor. With our dispatch calls for service, citizens calling in asking for us to do something, actually decreased, I think it was about 3%, while the officer-initiated activity actually increased about 8%. And some of that was we were doing heavy business security checks early on because so many businesses were closed. But when you look at the uniform crime reporting data, these are major crimes, violent crimes and property crimes are divided into a couple broad categories. But we saw a 32% reduction in property crime reports during this five-month period, and a 22% reduction in violent crime reports overall. So 54 as opposed to 69. And you got to be careful with those numbers because a lot of factors go in, but it's clear the overall crime trend went down during this five-month period. So that kind of aligns with what we've heard happen in many other areas of the country, and it wasn't the way we seem to be starting out.
And it kind of would seem to make sense if folks are around the house more. They're around the house more. Yeah, it's less likely to break into an occupied house if somebody's there, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could expect maybe commercial burglaries higher risk because they're not occupied at the time.
Right,
residential, more people are home. But you're also having people that aren't used to being around each other 24/7, with an increase in tension in the homes and family disputes and things like that.
I would be curious to know about the neighborhood stuff. Okay, so you're home. Okay, so if you're walking around the neighborhood at different times of the day than what you were before, and there's more people doing that, if there would be more eyes on, so to speak.
Well, that reminds me of one of my favorite movies, The Burbs, with Tom Hanks.
Okay, fine. But did they have a song on there that you remember?
You give me too much credit.
Yeah, okay. You're a video guy, not an audio guy on that one. So you're feeling kind of halfway okay about the way that things have kind of settled into place?
Well, again, I think all of us are going to be happy to put 2020 in the rearview mirror, just major, impacts and challenges. But I'm also very proud of the resiliency that I'm seeing in our community and in our apartment. And the men and women at EPD, obviously, and we're finding a way to navigate these kind of crazy, unprecedented times. And I know we're going to come out stronger. That almost sounds cliche, but it's true. I mean, it's you're going to go one way or another. It's going
right.
to destroy you, or it's going to build you.
Now, when Billy Hansel was in, he said the same thing. When Paul was in from CHP, he said the same thing. Are you concerned about staffing, that because of some of the challenges that are going on, that they're less apt to go into the career choice or make the career choice, and those that are either going to check out a little bit early or maybe it's not a permanent career for them?
I definitely have concerns because we were already in about a 10-year stretch of major nationwide recruiting and retention issues in law enforcement, and the current state of unrest and the things that are being said about law enforcement officers kind of painting with a broad brush, I do fear is going to discourage some people coming into this profession. Some changes to the law, some of which are good, but others which are knee-jerk and are going to create great problems or another challenge. But we're a nation that rises to challenges, and you can only hope that people continue to go, hey, I want to make a life, have a life that has meaning, makes a difference, and they're willing to step into this profession because we need good people.
Have your protocols changed at all? Or as you anticipate the hiring process, are you going to be making a couple of adjustments in that?
Well, we had finally experienced some success with that, kind of found a formula that was working for us when all of this hit. I'm in a unique situation right now where, the city faced around, overall as a whole, around 15% budget reductions for fiscal year 2021 with a lot of uncertainty in the future. And that resulted in some lost positions around the city. Thankfully, no pink slips to anyone, but we had to unallocate some positions, including at the police department. And so that's kind of created a little bit of a new reality for a while that we'll have to see if we're able to get some of those back moving forward, because it does have an impact on recruiting and retention efforts as well.
Job security does. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, along with Baywood Golf and Country Club. Steve, you last Friday, Pam Powell was in pinch hitting for Miles and had indicated that there's some new design efforts that are going to be available funding through the city proper to help businesses perhaps stay cleaner, look cleaner, have more safety, things of that nature. I would suspect that you've had your hand in that a little bit. What's going on with this?
Well, and that's a little bit broader of a topic with what the funding is going to be available, but an element of that is, as I understand it, like you said, crime prevention through environmental design or SEPTED type of concepts. And that's something we brought a national training here a few years back, about 3 years ago now, and multiple city staff members were part of that, not just my department, because it's really a collaborative team. You have code enforcement, you may have planning and building, you know, you have the
police
department.
Sure, you gotta be able to permit it.
Right. Yeah, exactly, because there's some things we don't know about the permitting process or, you know, building code requirements, for instance. You can't just throw up a lock gate anywhere that you want, for instance. But, you know, I think that's a great strategy, because if to attack any kind of crime problem, you look at it like a three-legged stool. You have your suspect factors. You have maybe victim factors that make any of location factors. And if you can topple any one of those three legs, often you can solve a problem. You know, one is you apprehend or prevent whoever it is that's committing the crimes, and then obviously a crime won't take place. Or if a victim's engaged in some risky behavior and you can help protect them, you might solve it. But the location-based one is a great way to look at things, because if you can change the environment to make it less conducive to crime, that can be something as simple as taking a vacant alcove at a business, like down at Los Bagels, where you had people loitering and sleeping at night, and you put a flower bed in there where there's no room to sleep. You just solved a recurrent problem they were dealing with every day at almost no cost. And that's just a simple example, but then there's no need for the police to get involved at all. So if people can take a look at their properties, their businesses, and come up with some strategies that make, again, those locations less conducive to some of the crime and disorder problems and more attractive to their clients or customers, then that's a win all the way around, and it reduces calls for service, police services, and other city department services.
I've always thought that some of the gates, not wooden gates, but the metal gates, you know, whether it's wrought iron or things of that nature, particularly in the Old Town area, have a historical element to it. You know, I mean, it can be an architectural complement rather than just keeping things from going sideways when you're not there. Is there a design review as part of this? Are you familiar with that, or are you just looking at from a cop perspective ways to not have some of these issues?
Well, I think that's where the benefit of bringing in other disciplines outside of just law enforcement, because I would agree, you take a historical district like that, you don't want a chain link fence down there. You want something that's going to fit the architecture and the period. And while it will provide security, it would also look appropriate for the area. You're not creating a prison. And, so that's a valid point. And, again, there are some fire and other building code requirements that come to where you can install some of those things. We've ran into that a couple times where legally they couldn't install at least the type of security gating that was initially recommended. So you have to find other workarounds for that.
Yeah, I'm thinking the old, no need to say the old because nobody remembers what the old was. But next to Many Hands, there's that cool little alcove that's there. I'm sure that there's a tendency for some, I don't get out that early in the morning to look.
Right.
But something like that could really be complemented nicely, presuming that the landlord has interest in that.
And that's the other side of the coin is often, you know, you have people or that own the property themselves. They're not the tenant there. The tenant's the one experiencing the problems, but the owner either doesn't have the funding or the will to spend the extra money that it takes to implement some of these strategies. And that's where a program where, you know, funding can be made available, you know, for some of these projects, you know, with a process that that really benefits some of these businesses and property owners in these cases.
Yeah, everything has to go together in concert. Otherwise, it just doesn't work out that well. Now, there's a lot of public spaces that are there also. I know twice now Eureka's pulled benches out of the plaza there at 3rd and F. Okay. Or 3rd and E, rather. You guys, you know, the old police station. You know, you got the rock in the corner, but you know sometimes that's an attraction. Also, I mean, those types of things. Are you thinking that the city is also going to be looking at some city-held properties and making some of those adjustments also?
Yes, and in fact, until COVID struck and kind of sidelined everything, we had some we took quite a deep dive at Clark Plaza and options there, and had a rough plan outlined, I think, that would have solved a lot of the issues and still made it a very available public space. And we'll have to see if we're able to come back and revisit that here.
That's right, because we got the firemen doing their memorial as an element of
right.
that also.
That's right. And then also uses for the annex there that's probably underutilized at this time, the police annex.
I still think it was Jim's shoeshine.
Our former mayor.
Yeah, I know. Things have changed.
Yeah.
Life goes on. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Watson. Steve, so with the challenges that are there, the design concept of, I mean, you don't want, like you said, you don't want to be a prison, but you still don't want to have, you don't want to be ignorant to or not pay attention to what's going on. What's been the response? Even though I know it's still going to be formalized down the road, but there's got to be some talk on the street about this.
You know, we've had and seen some successes implemented, so I think it has a lot of promise, and I love seeing these, you know, these options that are being created and put forward where there's funding sources, because funding is often one of the number one obstacles for businesses to implement some of the design changes, as well as, again, sometimes code issues like that. But I think there's a growing recognition of this strategy to help address some of these issues, which is good. At the same time, we really don't have anyone that's full-time assigned to do these things, so we have people from my department and other city departments that, on top of all the many other hats that they wear full-time, are also trying to assist in these areas. And maybe we'll get to some point where the city will be able to hire somebody that can really specialize in the concept and kind of be the central point for SEPTED strategies and implementation.
I would think that you could have like a suggestion sheet or tips. Here's a scenario, here's a possible solution. Just have a series of those, maybe just not to be actually implemented, but to get the mind starting to think about things and what can be done, and then let them kind of take it from there.
Right, and not just for existing structures, but anytime you come to build a new building in the city of Eureka, there should be a SEPTED consideration that goes into
Just think about it. I mean, it's protecting the property.
Yeah. So what we do now, because the reality is you can refer a person to books or a lot of information online, but that just doesn't always happen. So when you're able to physically send one or two people there and they do an on-site survey and generate a report with suggestions, that takes a lot of staff time and effort, but it's very much appreciated when we're able to do that for the businesses, because you kind of give them some blueprint ideas that they could implement.
Well, if it makes it easier for you guys, which means not having to come back often, Maybe that's the payoff.
Oh, we've had properties where we've had close to 200 calls for service in a year, which is insane.
Design, or are we talking drug houses?
Well, in particular, problems like the former Budget Motel and one of the I guess you'd say slumlord property owners down in that area with significant nuisance issues, combination of both some physical design or location-based issues, but even more so the management.
Right. Yeah, and the commercial side of things. Now, are there also tips that residents can do?
The same principles apply to any property.
So if there was a sheet of some source or a reference point, something like that might help, you know, in the neighborhood.
Even some of the basic burglary tips that we frequently give out technically are septet and related things, mm-hmm. like, trimming your shrubbery down to about, in some cases, either 2 feet high to, you know.
That was more like about 4 inches there off the counter, buddy.
Yeah. You know, trees trimmed up at least six feet so that you have good lines of sight where people can hide. Lighting, things of those natures can help.
Just landscaping design.
Yeah, landscaping's a big one because, if you allow it to overgrow, you can create places where people can hide, whether it's jump out of the bushes and assault you, or, you know, linger around your house until you're gone and then take something that doesn't belong to them.
Or trick-or-treat. That's coming up, you know.
Then you have the porch pirates, too, after that.
Yeah, that's a whole different phenomenon.
Trick-or-treat in the COVID world is going to be interesting this year.
I think it's going to be like some of the stores that you're going to get pre-selected baggies. You just throw baggies out instead of letting the kids, you know, grab inside the bucket, so to speak.
Well, luckily, most people are wearing some kind of mask during Halloween, right?
Some of us have been accused of doing it all the time, so let's not go there, okay? Enjoy the rest of your weekend, buddy.
Thank you. You too.
See everybody tomorrow.